Welcome to another edition of Giants Chronicles, presented by New York Presbyterian. I'm Bob Papa in the Legacy Club at MetLife Stadium. The Giants have had several golden eras, but none brighter than the 1950s. The Giants captured a championship in their first year in Yankee Stadium in 1956. It was a time and a place in which the New York football Giants of the 50s were the toast of the town. Charlie Connolly started his college football career in 1942, attending the University of Mississippi. He left school to serve as a Marine in the South Pacific in World War II. He returned to Ole Miss in 1946 and became an All-American at quarterback, and he's considered to be one of the greatest players in the school's storied history. The Giants acquired Connolly from the Washington Redskins in 1948, and Charlie's freewheeling style of play immediately accelerated New York's offense. And in his debut season, he was named NFL Rookie of the Year.
Charlie Connolly is one of the strongest men of character, of strength, inner strength that any mortal I've ever known. And, you know, they talk about who would you like to have next year in a foxhole? That's the man you want. He is just great under pressure. He was tremendous.
When I first came with the Giants, I guess they listed me as 24 years old. But I was 47 because I'd been in college and I went in World War II for 3 years. My offensive players, linemen, the guys who were blocking for me kind of felt sorry for me because I was a little older. When the guards say, for example, Mr. Block, some of my teammates would come back and apologize. Well, I would tell them, you're killing me, you're hurting me. And I think my age helped me quite a bit. But
Charlie was a very quiet type of leader. You know, he never had much to say until he found out who you were and you played well, and if he liked you, you were in.
In 1956, Charlie led the Giants to the NFL championship by beating the Chicago Bears 47-7 in Yankee Stadium. A three-time Pro Bowl selection, he led the team back to the NFL championship game in 1958 and 1959, and was also named the NFL's most valuable player in 1959 as well. Connolly's legend grew even more when he was chosen as the first ever Marlboro man in commercials. He ended his career in 1961 with over 19,000 yards passing and over 1,400 completions. His number 42 was retired by the Giants, and he's the namesake of the Connolly Trophy, the football award given annually to the top player in the state of Mississippi. And in 2010, he became an inaugural member of the Giants Ring of Honor. In 1951, the Giants selected Kyle Rote out of Southern Methodist University as the bonus selection in the NFL draft, and he immediately became one of New York's most productive and popular players.
Rote slips like quicksilver into the open. He outruns the field for 52 yards. Rote comes back on his own college gridiron. The Giants win it 24-6.
Kyle Rote was respected on the field as a leader. But the players loved him, too. In fact, I think six of them named male children after him, using the name Kyle, which was not a very common name in New York.
Hailing from San Antonio, Texas, Rote started out as a running back. But after two seasons, he switched to wide receiver following a severe knee injury. Rote served as the Giants team captain for eight seasons, and he was widely respected for his in-depth knowledge of the game.
He was a football genius. I mean, he was really one of the smartest football people I've ever known.
He was just a very intelligent, very bright.
If somebody had a problem on the team, he seemed to know that. And all of a sudden, you'd be looking over, maybe Jimmy Patton would be down or up, something, you know. And you'd look over and Kyle would be sitting there talking to him. And he was like the team counselor. And he was the guy we always, all of us, seemed to turn to.
When Rote retired after the 1961 season, he had become the Giants' career leader in pass receptions, receiving yards, and touchdown receptions. And in his 11 seasons with the Giants, New York won the Eastern Conference Championship four times. And in 1956, they won the NFL Championship, defeating the Chicago Bears 47-7. Rote was one of the founders of the National Football League Players Association in the mid-1950s. He became the organization's first elected president, where he fought for equal opportunity so that players of all races would receive equal treatment when teams played on the road. After retiring as a player, he became the Giants' backfield coach for two seasons. And during his tenure, New York played for the NFL championship two times. Stay tuned for more Giants Chronicles, presented by New York Presbyterian, stars of the 1950s. Welcome back to Giants Chronicles, presented by New York Presbyterian, stars of the 1950s.
That was such a great time in sports. And we had Frank Gifford and Kyle Rote and Charlie Connolly on the offense. Alex Webster, who came from New Jersey and played with the Giants. And Roosevelt Brown and Emlyn Tennell, Andy Robustelli. And I shored up the middle. When you look back at the history of this game and the contribution that each and every one of these ball players made, it was just such a magical time.
In 1955, Big Blue added a tough running back from Kearney, New Jersey, known as Big Red Alex Webster. Before coming to the Giants, Webster starred at NC State. In 1952, he would play in the CFL with the Montreal Alouettes as a two-time MVP. But Webster would be elated to find out the news he was coming home to play for the Giants.
I got a phone call from Wellington Mara, and I was asked to come over, and we talked and everything, and he offered me a contract for, you know, $10,500, which, that was a lot of money, and a $2,500 signing bonus, and I could live right in my home in Kearney and commute every day. And I said, oh, well, that'd be sweet. My wife loved it. And anyway, I signed. And actually, everybody in town, that was I was, a, you know, supposedly a big shot, which I was, and, but it was a big thrill, more than anything. And it worked out real well. And I had a good year that first year. You know, I got accepted. And that was 55. That was my first year. And then in 56, we won the championship.
Alex Webster knifes into the end zone to put the finishing touch to a spectacular 47-7 victory for New York. The New York Giants win professional football's biggest prize, the World's Championship.
Webster completed a potent Giants championship backfield that already included Kyle Rote, Mel Triplett, and the great Frank Gifford.
Alex Webster at left and Frank Gifford make up the outstanding halfback combo in the league.
Frank was good. You know, he was one great football player, not only Mr. Madison Avenue and all the commercials and the radio and the television. I was a different style of player. I was, you know, head-on. He was a shifty type of runner and everything. And I was as big as I was, the slowest guy in the backfield. Everybody could catch me.
Once again, the Giants made it to the NFL Championship game in 1958 when they hosted the Baltimore Colts at Yankee Stadium in the first ever sudden death overtime contest, which would become known as the greatest game ever played.
But Nelson hits him and the ball pops loose. Webster picks it up and gallops downfield. Pandemonium grips Yankee Stadium.
We didn't realize that we were going to be playing in the greatest game. You know, we just wanted to win and get in the locker room and go home. And I thought we were the better team, but Unitas was he was just a magician underneath that quarterback.
Unitas gives to Amici. The Colts are the world champions. Amici scores.
Webster retired from Big Blue in 1964. He would later go on to be the backfield coach of the Giants for two seasons before eventually succeeding Allie Sherman as head coach in 1969. The move was applauded by everyone, and one of the most beloved Giants of all time was now leading the team that he loved. The players responded by winning in Big Red's very first game, carrying their victorious leader off the field. Alex was named Coach of the Year in 1970 and had another winning season in 1972. He retired from coaching at the end of the 1973 season, and in 2011, he was named to the Giants' Ring of Honor.
I think, you know, once I was a Giant, I was a Mara. And that's one of the things that I got so close with the Giants. Because, you know, I was accepted into the club with the family. You know, and the family was big back then. You know, once you're in the family, you're one of the guys. You know, once you're a Giant, you're always a Giant.
Stay tuned for more Giants Chronicles, presented by New York Presbyterian, stars of the 1950s. Welcome back to Giants Chronicles, presented by New York Presbyterian, stars of the 1950s. In 1954, another former player, Jim Lee Howell, was named head coach of the Giants. Howell agreed to step in only after securing the jobs of arguably the two greatest staff assistants in NFL history.
You realize we had the greatest coaching staff in the history of the National Football League? Vince Lombardi coached the offense and Tom Landry coached the defense and Jim Lee Howell was the head coach.
With future Hall of Famers Vince Lombardi and Tom Landry as his offensive and defensive coordinators, Howell never had a losing season in his 7 years as the Giants head coach. He led New York to the NFL championship game three times in those 7 years, and in 1956, the Giants won their first NFL title since 1938, a 47-7 rout of the Chicago Bears in what became known as the Sneakers Game sequel.
And Triplett blast 20 yards down to the 2-yard line. Oh, those pretty white sneakers.
The Giants would play for the NFL championship again in 1958 and 1959. The following year, 1960, would mark the final season of Jim Lee Howell's career as the New York Giants head coach, and he would retire with a record of 53-27-4. In 1953, the Giants would truly make one of the best sleeper picks of all time when they chose offensive tackle Roosevelt Brown in the 27th round of the NFL draft.
Rosie Brown was huge. He was 6'5". Weighed about 200 and probably 60 or 70 pounds. Probably the best offensive lineman, maybe the best ever. And I wouldn't want to have a foot race with him. And he was really fast and very athletic. I mean, he could have played any position. Could have played halfback probably too.
With Rosie paving the way for star teammates like Frank Gifford, Charlie Connerly, and Alex Webster, the Giants would capture the 1956 NFL championship, and Brown was named Lineman of the Year.
Well, Rosie was quiet. He just did his job, did it perfect. An outstanding blocker that you could count on Rosie.
He was extraordinary and a wonderful, wonderful person.
After his 13-year playing career, Brown retired and became the Giants' offensive line coach in 1966. He continued his affiliation with the Big Blue as a coach and a scout for over 30 years, and in 1975, he was enshrined into the Hall of Fame. Stay tuned for more Giants Chronicles, presented by New York Presbyterian, stars of the 1950s. Welcome back to Giants Chronicles, presented by New York Presbyterian, stars of the 1950s. In 1948, Emlyn Tennell became the New York Giants' first ever African-American player when he signed as an undrafted free agent. And for 11 seasons, he was a major spoke in Big Blue's famous umbrella defense.
Emlyn Tennell was a great athlete. Em had a great awareness of what was going to happen. And he had an instinct about things. I mean, he might, all of a sudden, he'd be like a linebacker. But you think, meanwhile, his man is uncovered downfield. But it doesn't matter. He made the play at the line of scrimmage. Not many mistakes in his career. And a whole lot of great plays.
In his first 10 seasons, he never had less than 6 interceptions, and his 79 takeaways are the second most in NFL history. Tennell was also spectacular on special teams. He led the NFL in punt returns in 1951 and 52, and amassed 3,506 return yards and 6 touchdowns during his career. In 1953, Tennell actually had more interception and kick return yards, 927, then the NFL's leading rusher, Dan Towler, who ran for 894 yards. He was named to the Pro Bowl 9 times and in 1967 became the first African-American to be inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
He was the first African-American player for the New York Giants. He later became the first full-time black assistant coach in the NFL.
Bears kicking a 40-yard field, though, that's a long ways. You ain't going to rush him, are you?
No. Not unless
he was the first African-American inducted in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But to me, the real impact was on the field.
Tennell's exceptional athletic ability and instinctive nose for the football earned him the nickname Offense on Defense. He was a master at reading plays and disguising coverages, and his cat-like quickness and cagey smarts kept opposing play callers guessing. Tennell loved to lull quarterbacks into a false sense of security and then turn their passes into his picks. But as scary as he was as a defensive back, Tunnell may have been even more frightening on special teams.
The waiting arms of Emlyn Tunnell, and he does what the New York fans have been hoping for all afternoon as he dodges away from the outstretched hands of the Eagle defenders to romp 72 yards behind good blocking, adding another brilliant run back to his record and a touchdown to the New York side of the scoreboard.
He did the thing that coaches tell their players over and over again, get the ball and run with it. There was not a lot of hesitating and jitterbugging. Tunnell got the ball and found the hole and ran to daylight.
Sidestepping a pull-like charge, Emlyn Tunnell takes the ball on the 26. He ducks, Arthur Tate, outstretched ice hook, and prancing like a ballet dancer on a crate of eggs, he skates all the way, 74 yards over a sheet of ice for a giant touchdown.
He was a safety who was in charge of sort of roaming and patrolling the outfield.
Watch M. Tunnell play it like Willie Mays. A perfect catch.
Quarterbacks at the time talked about Tunnell was one of the best at faking his intentions, disguising his intentions. Quarterback would wait all day, see that Tunnell didn't seem to be spending a lot of time over in a certain area of the field, and throw there and get burned for it. Bobby Lane called Tunnell the best in the business at that. Because of that, he was incredibly successful at not just stopping the other team, but changing games.
Tunnell retired after the 1961 season and went on to become a scout and assistant coach for the New York Giants. Recognized for his achievements as an athlete and competitor, Tunnell was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1967, the first African American to receive this honor. In 2010, he was named to the inaugural New York Giants Ring of Honor and is remembered as a football pioneer who revolutionized the position of defensive back.
You hear stories today about this cornerback or this safety doesn't have many interceptions because quarterbacks don't test him. Well, that was certainly the case with Tunnell, and yet he still was the NFL career leader in interceptions when he retired. He didn't wait for the game to come to him. He went and made plays. And that idea that you could have a game breaker on the defensive side of the ball more or less originated with Emlyn Tunnell.
In 1951, the Los Angeles Rams selected Andy Robustelli out of Tiny Arnold College in Milford, Connecticut, in the 19th round of the NFL draft. As a rookie with the Rams, he racked up 3 sacks in the NFL championship game against the Cleveland Browns.
Graham steps back to pass, but the Rams come charging in, and Andy Robustelli spins him to the ground for a 3-yard loss. Graham drops back to try again. He's being rushed. Andy Robustelli grabs him in a vice-like grip, and Graham is thrown for a 6-yard loss.
In addition to his 3 sacks, Robustelli's fumble return set up the go-ahead touchdown as the Rams defeated the Browns to win the NFL title. Traded to the Giants in 1956, Robustelli was at it again in the NFL championship game against the Chicago Bears. Playing on a frozen field, Robustelli terrorized the Bears' offense, registering 2 sacks and a fumble recovery.
Smart, tough, strong, a great leader. He led by performance. When you needed the big pass pressure, Andy somehow could pull it off. Just a great player and a great person.
Although he weighed only 230 pounds, Andy Robustelli was one of the great pass rushers the game has ever seen. He was the consummate team player on a roster that featured 5 future Hall of Famers, and he was captain of one of the greatest defenses in New York Giants history. Andy played 9 years with the Giants and was a player coach during his last 3 seasons. He was one of the most durable players in NFL history, and throughout his 14-year career, he missed only 1 game. He possessed a rare combination of strength and speed, creating turnovers that his eager defensive teammates turned into points. He was named to the Pro Bowl 7 times and played in 8 NFL title games. And in 1971, he was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. After his playing days were over, Andy joined the Giants front office, becoming the team's acting general manager from 1973 to 1978. And in 2010, he became an inaugural member of the New York Giants Ring of Honor.
This tough lineman played in 7 Pro Bowls and 8 NFL title games.
He missed only one game in his 14-year career. Hall of Famer, number 81, Andy Robustelli. Not only did the Giants win a championship in 1956, they played in the greatest game ever played, the 1958 championship game, losing to the Baltimore Colts. But this was a team that sort of defined an era in the National Football League. Not only did they win a championship and become the toast of the town in New York, but this is a team that also kind of put the NFL on the national map. And this was a team filled with so many great players, players that had a unique style that made it all the more special. That wraps it up for this week's edition of Giants Chronicles, presented by New York Presbyterian. I'm Bob Papa. This segment is brought to you by GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on your car insurance. Visit GEICO.com.